Happy New Year and a month.
Yay!
Yay!
Better late than never.
Hang on, that seems to be a bit too loud. Sorry, just got to adjust things slightly because of the wall of sound I just saw. Sorry, getting used to new recording equipment here, so...
That's pretty massive.
Yeah. Sorry if that first little yay was a bit too loud.
Sorry. I'll try to be a bit more quiet this year.
That's okay.
That's so funny.
Got a fancy new audio mixer here in the Rufus Project Studio.
Yes.
Mm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I meant to say something?
So if this is your first time listening to the What the History, you are our history podcast, we just like to have a little chat beforehand before we get into proceedings.
Yes, whack job banter. I blame the heat, personally. It is hot here.
Didn't we promise to stop talking about the weather?
Yeah, but at least we didn't start off with the weather straight off the bat.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. And given that it is hot and we're in a small room with nothing but a ceiling fan, I think we'd better get back on with our first episode back for 2019.
That's right, as long as we've got a fan.
Indeed.
Just what?
What the... Hello and welcome back to What the History for 2019!
19!
Woohoo! I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
Susie Holland. Hello everyone!
And this is a podcast where we give you two little tasty tidbits of history to make you say, What the History?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And welcome, everyone. And welcome to our new listeners and old listeners for our third year. Is this our third year?
Yes.
Yes. It's crazy we have to think about it then.
It's all good. So what are we going to start 2019 off with, Susie? No pressure.
No pressure at all. Okay. No pressure detected.
No.
That doesn't even make sense. But anyway, okay, now, it's been described as a town similar to the game SimCity, with its 130 and counting roundabouts, straight-lined roads, and greener-than-green parks with 343 kilometres of footpaths, bridleways for horses, and cycle paths. It's the home to concrete cows, WD-40, and, as with a lot of areas in this town's home country, has a rich history that goes back to the Bronze Age. And it's also home to the first cinema multiplex in England. I'm talking about the town in Buckinghamshire, England, obviously, of Milton Keynes, or MK to the locals. Milton Keynes is actually a very young town, and it was announced on the 23rd of January 1967 by the then Housing Minister Anthony Greenwood that a new green forest town was to be constructed. It was designed on a simple grid system to relieve the housing need in London, which is about 74 kilometres away, and encompasses the areas around Stony Stratford, Wolverton, Newport Pagnell, and Bletchley, which are known as constituent towns. It's also the location of a few significant archaeological finds, a Bronze Age jewellery hoard, a Roman villa, Roman gold coins, and a wealth of artefacts from the Middle Ages. The Catavellani tribe controlled this area prior to the Roman conquest in AD 43 from their fort in Danesborough, which was near Woburn Sands, southeast of Milton Keynes, so it encompasses a very big area. Now, okay... Admittedly, I'm not here to give you a history lesson, but I just wanted to give you the background on this town where the green spaces live alongside long roads and sculptures live on traffic islands. I kid you not. There are also those who believe something mysterious is in Milton Keynes, describing it as, and I quote, a dark web of conspiracy, occult, supernatural and legend, end quote, and leads to the what the subject. According to sources, there was a 400-year-old cursed elm tree which used to stand in the middle of the village of Middleton, where it was said that if the tree ever died, no more baby boys would be born in the village. This came true as the tree did die from Dutch elm disease after it was rammed by a car in the 1970s, and then the village was part of Milton Keynes, so there were no more home births there. Coincidence or curse? The village of Newport Pagnell is one of the most haunted places in England, apparently, and Satan himself was a resident of Olney High Street and was a regular drinker at the Two Brewers Inn, formerly called the Queen's Head Pub, where, as per what Satan usually gets up to, caused so much mayhem that he was tricked into exile by a clever priest. Now, one of the most interesting things about Milton Keynes is the way it's set out. Its grid system with its roads horizontal or vertical, with Midsummer Boulevard so named as on the summer solstice, the day that has the longest amount of daylight with the shortest night, the sun rises in alignment with the boulevard's east end. There are places from which to watch this, with Milton Keynes becoming the more popular spot over Stonehenge due to the lack of crowds, which grow in number yearly at Stonehenge. In the 1970s, architects consulted Greenwich Observatory to create the exact sunrise alignment in Buckinghamshire and then convinced engineers to move the roads just a few degrees to create this alignment. Therefore, Milton Keynes has been described as, and I quote, a mystical portal to higher realms, end quote. To celebrate, the architects sat down on the grass, built a bonfire, got stoned, and played Pink Floyd. Ah, the 70s. There have been suggestions that, again, the alignment was no accident. And not only were the architects wanting to do a little bit of extra with their planned city, but Milton Keynes was also built on a ley line, which moves through the major man-made landmarks, such as Campbell Park, which has mounds, a light pyramid on the hill in the park called the Belvedere, a working sundial, and a labyrinth. The apparent ley line begins at the Cathedral of Trees, designed on the older Norwich Cathedral pattern, in 1986 by designer Neil Higson. It moves down to the cricket pitch, then the Belvedere at Campbell Park, the Ferris wheel on Midsummer Boulevard, the Midsummer Shopping Centre, which is itself is circular with Avery, Midsummer and Silbury Boulevards intersecting through it, down to the octagon-shaped junction named Witton Gate and ending at the glassed station gate. It's been suggested that the reasons for the roundabouts and intersection is to manipulate the movement of people, and the Ferris wheel is a stargate to another dimension, and the shopping centre is to store the electric energy from the old power that surrounds Milton Keynes. Interesting. In the centre of Milton Keynes, to contrast the Belvedere and its role in the summer solstice, is the winter solstice tree circle, which at sunset on the winter solstice, the sun shines into the circle. Sean and Jackie, two English dowsers, went to Milton Keynes and doused the entire Midsummer Boulevard to see if there was any evidence of a ley line as per their dowsing. They found evidence of a ley line down the boulevard and past the station gate, confirming that Milton Keynes may be a modern temple to the sun, built specifically on the ley line. From the air, Milton Keynes has a definite grid look, interspersed with circular structures, whether these are mounds or concrete or man-made objects. And speaking of air, in 2014, a UFO was sighted over Milton Keynes, described as zooming into the clouds and disappearing, flat and long and black with a white light in the centre. Now, I feel the need to visit Milton Keynes on my next visit to the UK. It sounds like my kind of place, it really does, where old histories and new intermingle with the green spaces of this planned town. And I would love to check out Midsummer from the top of the Belvedere and walk down Midsummer Boulevard. The town, purpose-built in the 20th century, with celebrated links to its past. Dark and mysterious, yet open and green, with a what the feel.
Yeah, it's just amazing to think that a purpose-built city in the 20th century would, yeah, follow like the midsummer solstice and appear to be built with more ancient beliefs in mind.
Absolutely, that's awesome. I absolutely love this place, and it's wonderful. I really honestly can't wait to get back there, and I wish I stopped off when I was going to London. From Stratford upon Avon, and we actually passed through the Milton Keynes train station, and I got really excited because then I saw Bletchley and things, and I was like, I remember these places. Yeah. But Milton Keynes sounds absolutely fascinating.
I had a bit of a geek out of Milton Keynes.
I did. I had a massive geek out. Yeah, I clapped my hands and things and I was having a little bit of a dance on the train because I had to stand up all the way from Stratford to London.
And Susie just stepped over the only segue I could think of.
I am so sorry. Oh, poo, what have I done?
Well, because, you know, I love it when a geeky What the History grabs my attention.
Yeah, you totally do.
And this one is a doozy.
Woohoo, geekiness!
Allow me to take you back to the distant, dark days of 1989. The Cold War was still winding down, and all around the world, people were extremely worried about the possibility of a nuclear war or a similar disaster. In the midst of this, NASA had announced they were launching the Galileo Space Probe, a plutonium-powered satellite that was destined to travel 4.6 billion kilometres to have a closer look at Jupiter. Even though its purpose was fine, there was a concern that a nuclear-powered spacecraft exploding on launch or in the atmosphere could lead to devastating nuclear fallout. All this did nothing to lessen the surprise of NASA staff when October 16, 1989, 2 days before the launch of the shuttle that was going to carry Galileo into space, they sat down to their computers only to see the following. Quote, "Worms against nuclear killers. WANK. Your system has been officially wanked. You talk of times of peace for all and then prepare for war." End quote. And a little further on, quote, "Remember, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat." End quote.
That is pure poetry.
Even more alarming was the announcement that the wank worm, as it became known, was deleting user files, even though later investigation would show that it only locked people out of the files, leaving the files intact. The worm soon started spreading, appearing in places like the US Department of Energy's nuclear facility just outside of Chicago, the European Centre for Nuclear Research in Switzerland, and the Riken Accelerator in Japan. Cybersecurity experts from all over the world were soon studying the worm, trying to work out how it worked and how it was spreading. Analysis of the code showed repeated reference to OILZ, or oils if you prefer, but no one could work out what it meant. The FBI could not work out where it was coming from, but the French Secret Service started tracking telecommunication networks, finding evidence indicating it came from Australia.
Yay!
The strongest evidence for its Australian origin had still been completely overlooked, and would remain so until 1997, well after those responsible for the worm had been caught, when an Australian journalist, Colette Dreyfus, pointed out the line, "You talk of times for peace for all and then prepare for war," were lyrics from Blossom of Blood, a Midnight Oil song from their four-track EP Species Deceases, and the lead singer of Midnight Oil, Peter Garrett, was also a major anti-nuclear campaigner back at the time.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, the meaning of oils fell into place, being Australian shorthand for the band. As it happened, late 80s Melbourne was a thriving centre for teens eager to explore the strange new world of cyberspace. Well before the internet as we know it, students and keen amateurs would log into bulletin board servers using super slow dial-up modems attached to their Commodore 64 and Apple IIe computers, allowing them to exchange ideas, information, software, and above all, hints on hacking and how to access protected networks. Even before the wank worm, I'm trying to keep it straight face myself. The Australian Federal Police were trying to keep an eye on the exploits of these pioneering hackers, creating the first Australian cybersecurity team, but were largely unaware of the Aussie origin of the worm until a fateful phone call was made. After a story about the spread of the worm appeared in the New York Times on 9th of March 1990, assuming that wank was automatically spreading, the journalist who wrote the article, John Markoff, received a rather irate call. The caller claimed, rather bluntly, quote, "You know that article you wrote on page 12 of the Times? It's wrong. There's no rogue program attacking the internet. It's not a virus or a worm. It's people." End quote. 2 days later, the following headline appeared on the front page of the New York Times. Quote, "Caller says he broke computer's barriers to taunt the experts." End quote. John went into the details of the conversation he had with a hacker and the world knew the Melbourne hacking community was responsible for the relatively harmless attacks. Of course, by this stage, roughly $500,000 had been spent by NASA alone in fighting the worm. Eyes turned to a hacker known as Phoenix. He had been in the sights of the authorities for previous hacks, and it was soon believed that he and a fellow hacker known as Electron were the ones responsible for, well, wanking the world's computers. Despite offering no practical assistance, the FBI put pressure on the Australian Federal Police to crack down on these pioneering system crackers and bring them to justice. Working out how to catch these guys was a major effort, ultimately combining phone and data taps along with physical surveillance to gather the required evidence. So it was that at 5:50 a.m. on the 2nd of April 1990, Electron, who has since spoken about his experiences, was surprised by two men bursting through his window and shouting at him to get down on the floor. Half asleep and half naked, he could only blink in surprise as the lights turned on and police filled the room, arresting him and confiscating his equipment. Electron ended up serving 300 hours of community service, while Phoenix, who Electron believed made the fateful call to the New York Times, was handed 500 hours. Despite having evidence of hacking activities, the authorities were still unable to directly link the two to the havoc caused by the wank worm. Mm-hmm. Every time.
Sorry, that's just hilarious.
According to the chief investigator for the Australian Federal Police, Ken Hunt, Phoenix came close to admitting what he had done. Quote, "Phoenix's greatest admission of guilt was when he said to me, 'If this was America, the FBI would ask me to work for them. Would you want me to work for you?'" End quote. Ken's reply was simply, quote, "No, we're the guys that caught you." End quote. So that is how the tale of the world's first major cyber attack was also the most Australian cyber attack of all times. I mean, who else in the world would come up with a wank worm that directly referenced Midnight Oil? To Electron of Phoenix, I give you a big hearty g'day, throw some snags on the barbie and crack a tinny to welcome both of you to the pages of What the History.
Well done, guys.
Amazing.
Oh, God. I just love the wank worm. That's just, yeah. It has to be an Australian that comes up with that.
The first time I heard about it, it was just like, this has got to be Australian.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, who else? Ah, sure, yep. Come on, Aussie, come on. Come on.
And with that rather
oh, God.
Triumphant Australian event.
Rock on!
Thank you for listening to the first episode of What the History for 2019.
Yes, thank you so much, guys.
Now, if you want to know more about what we've discussed, we do have our references down in the podcast description just down below there.
I've got stacks. Everyone loves Milton Keynes, apparently. Mm-hmm.
I don't have quite so many, but they're still pretty entertaining. If you want to know more about What the History, though, you can certainly check out our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you'll find all our previous episodes and all of our references for all those episodes. We're also, you can listen to the full backlog on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, or the podcast player of your choice. There's the enhanced version, which is now appearing exclusively on Rufus Project TV, which is at tv.rufusproject.com. If you,
there's so much to remember. There's so many places. You know, just look us up and you'll find us.
And if you want to find us on Twitter or on Facebook, we're easy to find there. You can use the hashtag W2HPod, or you can even send us an email to WTHpod@rufusproject.com. And speaking of Rufus Project, if you want to hear more of awesome Susie here, Susie joined Christian and myself on the first episode of the Rufus Project for 2019.
Indeed.
Where we decided to see if we could redeem the movie Vibes.
I love that movie. It's crazy. I love it.
I guess you can see how Susie felt about it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just gave it away. Oh, good. I have a poker face.
Indeed you do. So on that note, I hope you have enjoyed these two bizarre bits of history. Please let us know what you thought. We would love to hear from you. And we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say, what the history?
Good night, everyone.
Farewell.